One of them wanted to be the security guy. He claimed he was a security guy.
That's a different studio audience than we normally have there, Jarvis.
Yeah. it is.
What studio audience was that?
These are the younger people.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
These are a little bit younger artists.
I was wondering who that was. Yes, well, very good. Now, thanks for that. Now, I've been getting a lot of fan mail about my hair. Apparently.
Oh, they love it. They love it.
Well, there's one person that does not love it. And this is so I thought I would just do a couple little things here to show people how I've improved the image. So these glasses, low tech. Look at this thing. This is on the back of my cell phone. You're watching. See that?
Uh-huh.
I pull out my little mini spectacles.
And that's cool.
A la Colonel Klink, kind of. Right? Look at that. Is that awesome?
It is awesome.
Yeah, they work really good.
Wow.
A Facebook
pressure sales thing. Pretty neat invention.
Yeah, it's pretty. I never lose them, right?
Yeah.
And now this is from Miss Yvonne, who constantly makes fun of my hair and says it's flat looking. I happen to bring my little vanity comb. And double check myself in my vanity mirror to make sure the hair. And the hair is kind of flat. She's right, isn't she?
Yes.
So I said, "Well, I can't beat that. So I got to get a haircut." So that's a neat little device. Oops. So enough of that nonsense. Let's talk about some other nonsense. Does the word church security sound funny to you?
Yeah,
it does, doesn't it? Yeah. If God's all powerful, what do you need security for?
Right.
It doesn't quite. It's an oxymoron, I think, in one way. And I've never done a show on this. I've always wanted to do a show on this because I think this says a lot about what's going on in society. If we have to protect our churches and synagogues and our mosques and our places of worship from violence, it just seems, I don't know, it's strange, counterproductive.
Yeah.
So I thought we'd bring in somebody that knows something about this, because that would not be me. I'll learn a little bit about it. Mm-hmm. So welcome our special guest today, Mr. Bob Chauncey, CPP of the Security Institute, churchsecurityinstitute.wordpress.com. Welcome, Bob. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Chuck. Appreciate it. And, you know, just to kind of catch up a little bit, it's not new. In Nehemiah, they talked about the workers building the wall had watchmen that looked over them. The worker had his own sword, but if he's busy putting the blocks together, he couldn't watch the guy coming after him. The Bible talks about they pray and then they set a watch. So there's lots of evidence that it goes back a long time ago. But synagogues in particular within the last few days have had major problems. Churches have it also.
Well, Bob, that's why I did not pass my catechism class. I did not get any of those badges in catechism, unfortunately, although I got four aunts that are nuns. I never paid attention to that stuff. A couple priests, too, in the family. But you are correct. This does go back a long way. Let me rephrase. In modern times, we would think we wouldn't have such problems, but we seem to have many more problems than we do. So, first of all, tell us about your background. Tell us where you come from and what your profession is.
Sure. Some of it's a little similar to you. You know, started in the law enforcement end. Mine was kind of a roundabout thing because my dad was a pastor and I didn't want to be a preacher. I wanted to be a policeman. God had a sense of humor and he arranged it so I could do a little bit of all of it. My dad had a unique type job in that, you know, most kids can't go to work with their father. Their working conditions are place. It's just not possible. But I could go with my dad on two occasions, funerals and hospital visits. On the hospital visit, he'd park by the emergency room. It was easier to get into the hospital that way. At the funeral home, while he was doing the service, I'd go out front, talk to the policeman. They'd set me up on the motorcycle. I was probably 10, 11 years old, put the helmet on me, and, you know, I was now a motorcycle officer, a real chips. Then when the service was over and they were going to the cemetery, we didn't have seat belts. We didn't have bucket seats in those days. I'd stand up between my dad and the funeral director. Dad always liked to ride with the funeral director. They'd catch up friendship-wise. And so right in front of me was a motorcycle officer, you know, diverting traffic, taking us around about, lights and siren through the intersection, some of that. So I just thought that was really exciting. When I went away to college, part of my scholarship was to act as the assistant to the security officer on campus. And we were in a gated campus. It had been the Marine Forwarding Depot in what we call Portsmouth, Virginia, really in the city of Suffolk. And it was out on the James River, a long pier that extended out. They would bring ships in, unload ammunition and equipment, and then the ship would go into the Norfolk Naval Shipyard for maintenance, repairs, service, whatever. The college started as a junior college and a military prep school. So I went 1 year as a junior college freshman. It was a waking experience to have to get up at 5:30 in the morning, something I wasn't real used to. And not only get up, but you had to make the bed, get in a uniform, and get out in the street for formation. That was a real experience. But the second year, we were told we were moving to the new four-year school, and I had made lieutenant a platoon leader, and I was the prosecuting attorney for the honor court, and I was told if I came back the following year, I could be chief justice of the honor court. I had been nominated for that. And so between my extracurricular activities and my possible a future career as a security officer, I thought that was really neat. I'd come on at 6-7 o'clock in the evening, work till 9 or 10 o'clock. Then I'd go by the residence for the on-campus security officer, give him the car. He would take me back to my dorm, and he would provide security and patrol during the night. I worked some Saturday afternoons and a few Sunday afternoons occasionally. And being a Marine base, it had a perimeter fence that went all the way around it. Well, you're on a big coeducational college, and this is a college that many of the students came from the military junior college. No familiarity with the co-eds and the campus living. Male dorms were on one side of the campus. Females were lucky. They were down on the water, right on the James River, beautiful view, looking over towards Newport News. And you could keep your car on campus, but at 9 o'clock at night, they locked the gate and you couldn't go out after 7 or 8 o'clock during the week. And you could get an extended weekend and you had to be back by 11 or 12. Well, these boys and girls in their cars on Saturday and Sunday would take a little drive around the hundreds of acres. And most of the time they ended up back there on that Marine service road. And so, of course, when I had to go and do my patrol duties, I always headed out to the Marine Service Road because I was sure I could find some eager participants for my patrol excursion. From the college, I decided to go into law enforcement. And after 7 or 8 years, I just felt that I could do better on a private basis than I could working for the city. Virginia has a special conservator of the peace classification in the code, which makes you a special police officer with the same powers on private property that the officer has in public.
Well, that's
and
interesting.
That was my experience in being able to do law enforcement on a private basis.
Well, very interesting. So you had security first, then police, then back to security.
Right.
And you have your background with your family. So you kind of had this perfect storm of experience and exposure to things that most people don't have to work on church security. Now, church security to me, I was telling Jarvis before the show, I think it's kind of like an oxymoron, right? I mean, shouldn't a church be secure because churches really are open and most churches have an open welcoming mode to them? Otherwise, you know, it wouldn't be a place where you could go peacefully to worship. But unfortunately, in today's times, that's not really the case, right? Because
right.
We have churches that are vandalized and synagogues that are vandalized and mosques that are vandalized. And, you know, the hate comes in the open door, which is unfortunate. So, I mean, on the other hand, the priests probably go home and lock their own door. You know what I'm saying? Maybe, right? So speak to us about why there's this possible contradiction in
okay.
a church that wants to be open and welcoming, but, you know, too much open welcoming is kind of illogical.
Well, I experienced that just last week in talking with a local church that had contacted me and asked me to come out and talk to them about a safety security program. I've found that it's easier to talk about a safety ministry than to talk about a security program. churches are all familiar with some sort of ministry in their programs. And so when you talk about a safety or security ministry, it's something that can be a little more acceptable. Safety is always of interest. They like the idea that there's no security, it's safety. They don't feel hesitant about that. When you talk about security, the first thing that comes up is the gun, as we talked about earlier. And active shooters make a lot of press, but they're not the big problem. The biggest problem is a disruption of service. You may have seen the Catholic Church in New York just recently, where the it wasn't just a priest, he was some higher ranking. Anyway, he was doing a service and doing prayers, and a gentleman came up out of the audience. Now, they had New York police officers, uniformed officers, there as part of their security detail. This guy walked right up. Well, the police are following up onto the altar area, but they're behind him. He hits right square on a cold cock, knocks the priest down to the floor, and injures him. And by then, the police have caught up with him and grabbed him. Well, that's kind of the wrong way to do it. You don't want to chase after them and catch them after the fact. It would be better to be prepared up front. When I talked about my experience in the law enforcement, then into private security, I didn't really finish because a big part of my private security became ministry oriented when my next door neighbor, who was the producer of the 700 Club for CBN, Christian Broadcasting Network, there in Portsmouth, Pat Robertson, an attorney by profession, had come to Portsmouth, it said, with $13, bought a little country TV station, and set up Christian Broadcasting. My neighbor asked me to come over and talk to him. I had met Pat before because he actually supplied for my dad when my dad went to the convention for the church. And so when I went over and talked to them, they liked what they heard. They liked what I did. And I took over the security for CBN there in Portsmouth, later moving to Virginia Beach, where they built a much larger campus and now have Regent University. Today, they have a police force in Virginia. Again, campuses, universities can apply to the Department of Criminal Justice Service and be licensed as a police force for that campus, for that college. We have Old Dominion in Norfolk, and we have Norfolk State, Hampton University. All of these schools have a police force, with the exception of the community college. So at CBN, I really got a taste of ministry, executive protection. I did Efren Zimbalist Jr. If you and I are old enough to remember, he had the TV program, the FBI.
Thanks for that, Bob. Thanks for letting everybody know I'm older.
I knew that would be it. But I did Anita Bryant, Oral Roberts. When they opened the university, Billy Graham came, and I provided security for Dr. Graham. The best one, though, experience-wise for me, besides Anita Bryant, that's a whole other story. She had just gone through a big issue down in Florida when she came up here. But there was a bishop from Uganda that Idi Amin was trying to kill all of the religious leaders. And this bishop and his family escaped over the mountain by mule to get away from certain death. And he flew into Norfolk to be on the 700 Club. And you know how, I'm sure you remember, something's been planned for months probably. And at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you get a phone call and says, look, there's a plane coming in at 4:30, 5 o'clock. We need you to have three officers there and pick him up because he's got death threats and we've got to get him protected right off the plane. And you think, okay, how can we do that so quickly in heavy traffic? But we got it done, and we brought him back to the hotel. And he said, you know, I'm really not sleepy. I'm kind of wound up. If you've got some time, I'd like to sit down and talk to you. You can tell me a little bit about this area, about CBN, about your job as a private police officer, a security officer. And he said, I'd like to share with you my story of Uganda and how the government turned against religion. And it was a real wake up, but a very interesting story. And we see it in some of the refugees, people that are escaping from countries. Some are Christian and they're under threat. Others are Muslim or other faiths. And it's just a sad situation. But at CBN, I got a lot of experience on a large campus and property of providing their police and security service. I had a service of 150 people. We had 6 to 7 cars on the street at night with our own dispatcher, and we patrolled over 10,000 apartment units in 6 cities. So we were more than just the small neighborhood yard service. We were a private police patrol service. We did banks, actually did the city of Norfolk, the city of Virginia Beach, and the city of Portsmouth for some of their private security to cover public property and parks, parking garages, Chrysler Hall, Scope, things like that.
Bob, I got a question on Facebook. Anthony is asking, he says this, I'm currently in law enforcement but started out in security. My question is, do you have supervisory management experience in law enforcement to move into management, you know, in private security? And he wants to know if you got your CPP through as-is.
Yes, I was in our as-is chapter. It's called the Tidewater chapter here in Norfolk. The CPP program had just come out, well, I guess it was back about 1980. I talked to a gentleman on that today, in fact. It was ironic. He is CPP number 770,000 and some number. I took the exam in 1980, and I'm CPP number 1960, 1,960, and today 770,000. I credit as is as being a place that I learned more about private security than I did through some of the Department of Criminal Justice courses, which were directed towards security, but not really the industrial side.
Now, what was your rank when you left the law enforcement? What rank did you have?
I was just a patrolman. I was only there, like I say, a few years, what seemed like a few years. My careers have been almost like the Bible talks about periods of time, and 7 years seems to be about that period that passes. So I spent about 7 years on the police department, and I started my private service. It was actually just me and a part-time officer when I started. Had to start small. I started with one large car dealer who was having some thefts of property on the dealership, breaking into cars. But his biggest loss was Titan 90 tractors, the big tractor trailers, rigs, and they were stealing those tires. Now, that tire is probably almost as tall as I am, and I would have thought it would take hours to, you know, get that thing up and off. And we found out real quickly these pros that would come in would jack that cab up, put it on cinder blocks, or drop it to the ground when the tire came off and they dropped the jack and be out of there. We had a real problem, but we ended up correcting that problem. But I went from the car dealership in town out to a subdivision and an apartment complex out on the outskirts in what we call Churchland. And I patrolled between the two places and then started picking up clients in between. I started as a lieutenant with my own company, thinking I didn't want to be too, too high and mighty, but I didn't want to be just a patrolman working for the company, and I was the only guy.
Let's go back. Let's go back and talk about a typical parish and a typical view of what they think security is and shouldn't be. Do you find that most congregations are not concerned about security, or they think God's taking care of that bit, or what's the attitude about it? Most Catholic churches in LA, you used to be able to walk into because they're open all night, and now, you know,
24/7,
they lock up, right? Because we don't want to steal the gold chalice or something. But what, you know, in general, what do you think the feeling is with the people that run the parish?
Well, the real problem is just what you said earlier, that it's the idea that, well, we're trusting God, so we don't need security. And my comeback to that was, well, you trust God, but you locked your house when you left this morning, didn't you? And the answer is usually yes.
Right.
You locked your car when you parked it out in the parking lot and you came inside. You had to unlock the church unless somebody had already gotten here to unlock it. And you probably have your home, your car, and the church all insured, as well as you insure your life. So if you've got all of this insurance and all of these locked facilities, then how can you be trusting God? And if it doesn't work for your home and your church, then how can you expect it to work here? At a church just recently, and they said, we're not going to lock any doors. Our pastor thinks that we should be open and welcome to the lost and, you know, we don't want to run anybody off. And I've heard this many times, and I can only share with them some of the experiences where people come in. There was a little 7 or 8 year old girl who was in church with her mom and dad, explained to mom she needed to go to the bathroom. And mom said, all right, honey, you know where it's at. Just come right on back. Little girl goes out of the sanctuary, goes down the hall to the restroom. And unfortunately, there was a pedophile predator in that restroom who tried to assault the girl. Fortunately, she screamed and a class worker heard it. And they ran and the perpetrator ran off. But that shows that there can be no safety inside. You can do a lot of things, but one of the most important things once the service starts is to lock the doors. Have one main entrance that people can come in if they're running late, and have someone that monitors that entrance, preferably a safety or security officer. So we try to encourage the church to be the good steward. You know, the Bible talks about the master who gave each of his servants a certain amount of money. And he said, I'm going to be gone. And while I'm gone, I want you to take this money, invest it, make it work for me. And when I come back, you can give me, you know, what you have earned of my money. Well, each one had a different amount, but they'd all earned something until the last one. And he gave back the same amount given to him. And the master said, but you're giving me what I gave you. Why is there no return? And he said, I buried it in the ground so it would be safe. Well, if we're going to be a good steward of what God provides, and he provides people, he provides assets and resources, then we've got to take care of that. And the Bible also talks about the pastor is the shepherd. And this is where the sheepdog part comes in. If the pastor is the shepherd, and the Bible says that he is to provide and protect the flock, well, the sheep and the field have a shepherd, but they have sheepdogs that help that shepherd to keep away the predator. I like to say that there are 5 D's. There's the D for deter. And the best thing to do, of course, and we do it with signs, we do it with a traffic vest or a uniform. You deter somebody from coming in. You flashed up a picture a minute ago of a church and a CCTV, closed circuit camera. We encourage churches to use cameras both as a deterrent and also a way to get documentation, evidence of what happens, good or bad, inside. If you cannot deter it, then you want to detect it. And one of the first things I tell a church is to have someone or more than one person, depending on the parking lot and the outside of the facility, have someone in the parking lot and preferably in a traffic vest or some way to be easily, quickly identified as something other than just a member coming to or from church or walking around looking for something in their car. If you can deter it and detect it, you're still safe, but not totally. If that predator comes up anyway, the third D is for delay. You want to get some help. Now, if you've got radios or cell phones and you've got some other people inside the church, you can call them out to assist you or at least be at the door so that when the predator that's coming toward the building won't get inside, they'll stop him at the door and you're coming up behind him to do it. If none of that has worked and the person has gotten in, then you've got to defend the flock. And that's what the sheep do. They go after that wolf gnarling and growling, and they want to take a bite out of crime, so to speak, out of that wolf. And so if you can't deter, you can't detect, you can't delay, then you're going to defend the people inside. The next question people say is, well, you know, what are we going to do? How are we going to defend them? Well, by trying to keep the guy outside first. In this case, you see a man with the earpiece, so he's part of the security detail, and he's up front. He's not in the back to chase the perpetrator down the aisle. He wants to stop them before they get down there. Can't defend it, then you've got to defeat it. And these churches say, oh, we don't want any violence. We don't want you to put your hands on them. You know, that's liability. We could be sued. I try to explain to them, you can be sued for what you don't do just as bad and maybe even worse than being sued for what you do. So there is nothing to make you safe if you don't do something. You're going to be liable one way or the other. And if you are a good Christian and if you're a sincere moral and just person, you're going to do whatever necessary to protect that life of someone else or to protect your own life. And this is the only case where something other than your hands comes into play. If you've got an active shooter situation, I try to teach and to train that you don't want to know as much about how to shoot as when not to shoot, because you can't just fire arbitrarily. Same way you can't use pepper in a church because you're going to affect everybody in the church. Up close and personal, one-on-one, there are several things you can do, but you've got to be careful about that. So I don't think the firearm is the most important thing for the average church. And if it's a high-profile TV evangelist type of ministry, then you're going to have some different circumstances. And I do have a couple of churches that have decided to go with armed security, but those people get extra training. They have a concealed weapon permit, and they know not only what to do, but what not to do and how to do the least amount of force to get the resistance. It's the same way, you know, we were taught in law enforcement. There's no warning shot. There's none of this shooting to shoot in the knee or the arm or, you know, shoot to kill. No, we don't do any of that. We shoot to stop the threat, and we've got to be able to have a good opportunity, a good shot to be able to do that.
When I ran a guard company, we had a client up on Mulholland Drive who, I won't name the church, but a lot of movie stars went there for church. And this is back in, let's see, the late 90s, I think. Late 90s, early 2000s, something like that. And we must have had four or five off-duty police officers up there every Sunday. We had a huge armed staff. And they, I think they more acted like, not pallbearers, that's not the right word whatsoever. You know, like
the traffic control. That's what happened.
Well, there was some of it, yeah, traffic control, because then if something happens, they see people coming in first, and they can stop it, like you say, to your point, before they get there. But then there was people also inside the church, and I always thought that was odd. But then I thought, well, if they got a bunch of movie stars going there, maybe it's not odd, you know. Now, I got a couple questions for you here. Hector, my friend Hector, is asking you, in your experience, have you found anything that keeps volunteer security staff excited and involved so they stay with the team? I would say listening to you lecture would be one of them, because you have quite a way with the words, and you're very engaging. So what do you do to keep your staff interested in this?
Well, one of the things that you have to do, I mean, you know, my way of looking at a new church when they ask me, what can we do about safety? How do we go about it? What do we have to do? You want a risk assessment, a review of what your risks are. What experience have you had at your church? What about other churches? And what about the community, the business community, residential community around you? From that, we get a better idea of the predictability or probability of something happening. Second, we want to look at the facility and how to best secure it, shut it down, protect it. And so the risk assessment, once we've got that, we have to develop a plan. And it can't be the same plan for every church, because some churches want it soft and easy. Some want it a little firmer. Some have real past threats or have some, as you say, high class or celebrity VIP type members, and they want to make sure they're safe because those people want to make sure they're safe. We suggest that they use mostly plain clothes. When we have our traffic officers that do the entry and exit, because we have three services and there's a lot of traffic going, makes it tough on a busy highway in one church. They will occasionally wander through the building, and people become upset. Why is that policeman here? Oh, he's got a gun. I mean, I cannot believe that some people think it's bad for the police officer to have a gun. And I asked one person one time, I said, don't you think that you're safer that that officer has an instrument that can protect your life and his life? And she said, oh, no, I'd rather be shot and killed than to have him use that gun and shoot somebody. Well, you know, I just had to walk away from that one because
Here's another question from my good friend, Mr. Ray. Ray, how you doing, buddy? Do some pastors neglect to take security seriously? And the issue is really what he's saying next is because so many people in their congregation are law enforcement. They're there anyway in the church. You'd think you'd want to work with that part of the congregation to say, okay, boys, girls, if something happens, can you help step up and deal with this? Just on a volunteer basis alone, right? Sure. It's a good question, right? And then we got to finish up with Hector's question, because Hector's question was, you know, what do you do personally to keep your staff excited about working on the team? So
and that's
ahead.
What I was coming to. So once we've got the plan, we know the risk, then we've got to recruit. Now, I use the word recruit, but I prefer the word select. You don't want to just take anybody that wants to be on your safety security ministry team. You want to pick the people that, number one, you're familiar with, you know a little bit about them, what are their reactions, what are their personalities, whatever. Churches say, well, we can't afford to hire officers. You've got in your own church probably security officers, former military, current military, law enforcement, sheriff's deputies, troopers. At one church said, oh, we've got an FBI agent. We don't have to worry about somebody coming shooting in our church, because we're going to put the FBI agent in a choir robe up in the choir. And if somebody's coming down the aisle with a gun, he'll pull his gun out from under his robe and he'll be able to shoot and stop them. And I said, that's going to get people killed on both sides. Whoever's standing next to, around, beside him, or behind him in the choir is now becoming a target, because the guy coming down the aisle with the gun is going to see that agent pulling out his gun. And then second, you're going to have some people on either side of the aisle sitting close to the end, and they're going to get hit, because I don't care how good the agent is, when he's drawing from under a choir robe in a hurry and trying to shoot a guy that's halfway or three quarters of the way down the aisle, and the guy's weaving and dodging, he's going to miss and he's going to hit somebody. But once we've got a team, then the training comes in. And this is where we keep the interest up. Not only do you train initially, but then you do some scenarios so they get some experience. And then as it goes along, you do retraining, both by video, online, as well as just in-church scenarios. And I think that for those that really take it serious and take it as a ministry, they're working in a way, they're working for God and protecting his flock. And that is the thing that really makes it powerful. The first person asked earlier about coming from law enforcement into security or vice versa. Did you have to have management level? And I don't really think so. If you've got a good law enforcement background of a few years, you know what to do. The problem with some police officers, and we see it sadly in the public sector, they make mistakes. They've got poor judgment just like others. And so they have to be trained to deal with that church. The picture you had a minute ago of the gang huddle, we want females on that team just as much as we want males. Because if you have to deal with a female member or a female predator, there are certain situations where a female can talk to them differently and make headway that the male won't. Once you've got the team, you need communication, either cell phone or radio. Radio's best, multi-channel, and they're inexpensive. We can get a church radios for $125, $150 each. Not exactly the $5,000 Motorola, but you don't need that Motorola $5,000. The other thing is to do some work with other churches and try to help them to see that you're your own mutual aid in a way. By doing the training, you want to teach them the least amount of resistance necessary to get the situation under control. Some people that disrupt the service, I think that's one of the more dangerous things in a church. There have been instances. Oh, recently, again, another Catholic church, just so happened to be the deacon at the church was doing prayers. A lady came up. I guess he thought she was going to be praying. She stabbed him and injured him fairly seriously. I saw in a church just a month ago, actually, I thought it was part of a drama team. The pastor is doing his sermon, his homily, and suddenly this lady gets up and starts talking to him and walking down the aisle to the front toward the altar. And I'm kind of watching and waiting, and you know, it wasn't my job to do anything, but I thought, there's nothing here. There's nobody that's going to stop her. She's talking to the pastor. Finally, she kneels down, and two or three ladies and two men from the church sitting up near the front got up and went down there with her. And it immediately brought back to mind that deacon that had been stabbed. Now, this young person had made one statement that kind of gave it away. They said, my father's a schizophrenic, but I'm not. And that makes you think perhaps they haven't had their meds, perhaps they don't take their meds, perhaps this is not drama, this is something real. Had she had a knife or a razor, she could have seriously injured, killed 5, maybe 6 people, maybe more, because nobody there really was trained on how to handle her. What we try to train them to do is to try to get the person out of the sanctuary, off to a private room. Number one, you avoid the audience, and some of them, that's what they want to do, is have an audience. There was a local church here that their security team is really good. They have some police officers that are members of the church. They have some military. And they had a guy come up. They spotted him in the parking lot. They tried to detain him, delay him there. By the time he got to the front door, they had 3 or 4 more of their security team that came up, and these guys really are trained for the security side, separate from their safety side. And so they stopped him, and they're talking with him, and he says he has a message from God for the pastor, and he's got to give him that message right now. And they said, well, you know, if sadly he's doing his service, that's not going to happen. And he said, well, what are y'all going to do? And the head of the team told me later, he said, you know, Bob, I said, you're going to know in about 30 seconds what we're going to do. And he said, I was thinking to myself, what are we going to do if we don't bluff him? Well, the guy took the bluff. In about 20 seconds, he must have been counting down. He turned in a huff, said something, and walked away. Now, had he came through the door or tried to, I think the question would have been, you know, what were they going to do? And they had decided that he was not coming inside. If that meant taking him down, that's what they'd have to do. There are provisions in the Code of Virginia for no trespass, and you can order someone, even if they're a member of the church, that they are now in violation of church policy and procedures. They're being told, ordered, not just asked, but ordered to leave the property, and if they refuse to leave, they're going to be arrested. Ideally, you want to call the police and have the police come and do it, or if you've got an off-duty member who serves on your team or who's in the church, you get them out there because they can make the arrest for something in their presence. And if that doesn't happen, Virginia has a citizen's arrest, and you don't like to use it, but if there's a crime in your presence, you do have citizen's arrest power. And if that guy is trying to assault or get past you, then that's going to be probably the valid probable cause.
Now, Mr. Jarvis, I think I just learned something. If someone walks up to you and says, you know, my dad was a schizophrenic, but I'm not. Do not ask them, how could you possibly know that? I think that would be the wrong question as a follow-up on that.
Yeah, that would be.
That would not be good. Bob, let's switch gears. Let me ask you a couple questions about, what's that feedback we're getting? That's kind of what, there's a little feedback, Bob. Maybe there's a volume up on your, maybe your Facebook volume's up. But anyway, so let's say, do you get more clients that want you to consult and train their staff and their membership, as opposed to you bringing the guards in to handle that part of it?
Well, since I'm no longer the owner or operator of a private security service and don't want to be with problems the way they are today, I retired from that business. We don't provide any officers. We encourage most of them to try to draw from their own membership, because most of the situations that are going to happen there are going to be with their members or somebody that they may know.
Well, even some internal problems. That's right. An internal member of the church may act out on something.
And somebody that gets emotional, over spiritual, is, it's, you know, in some of the non-traditional denominations, and I'm not going to talk about the state that had the snakes and all of that, but I've heard those stories. There are people that get a little emotional, a little over-religious. And if you take them by the arm in a kind and genuine, sincere speech and movement and say, let's go in the other room and pray about it, you may be able to talk down that situation from a unruly and disruptive person to one who's willing to go with you and talk. If you use a pressure point or two, you can emphasize, let's go and talk now, not later. And then it's that hard decision of what are you going to do to stop them? Where are they at? What harm can they do? What danger do they present? And so far, we've been pretty lucky, I guess.
Now, back to your point about training that check, Bob, just real quick, check your volume or maybe on your Facebook because I think okay. I'm getting some feedback.
My phone is turned off.
All right. So anyway, let's talk about, to Hector's point about keeping people motivated. I agree 100% that the training is probably the greatest motivator, right? Train your guards. It does a couple of things. It lets them know that there's leadership involved in the company, that you care about their the skill set. You're trying to improve their position in the company and improve their position in the industry as well. And it keeps them engaged to learn things and try harder for them. So I think that's a good point. But if you're going to go in and train the people inside the congregation, how does that look different from training the guards? Is it a longer process? I mean, most people that go to church more or less go on a regular basis. You may be able to expect the same members of law enforcement going to the same church every Sunday. So you got some continuity there, maybe more so than a guard force that has high turnover. And what's it take on your part to work with the members of the congregation to get them up to speed on a plan? Is this a month process? I think it would be an ongoing process where maybe you hit it once a month or every quarter just to kind of brush up on it.
Yeah, well, one of the first things, I am a safety security consultant, not a licensed or certified instructor. I've done that in the past. Don't do that now. So if they want training, I usually bring in off-duty officers, or there are some private security companies who have certified instructors to do personal defensive tactics and things like that. We found last year, we did some Saturday morning training breakfasts, and we did it once a month. It was a four-hour session with a 30-minute breakfast, and we had started out about 50, got up to about 95 people, and they liked it. They got more and more interest, and they got camaraderie with other churches and talking about other experiences. I have, in my old days in law enforcement and in private security, I've had some dangerous situations where we had to use force to different degrees. In the church so far, I haven't seen that really necessary here. The one church I spoke about earlier that has a really good program, they have 75 people on their safety security ministry teams. They start out on the safety side, and if they show the aptitude, the patience and the ability to control emotion and to be able to be effective, they move them over to the security side unarmed. If they want, unless they are former law enforcement, if they're former law enforcement, then they will let them carry, but they require some additional training on when not to shoot more so than when to shoot. If they're not law enforcement, then they send them through a training range course, and they make them get their own liability policy for themselves and their actions to protect both the church and themselves.
Well, that's a good idea. Yeah, that's a very good idea.
So that's the best way to go. You start out small with a safety. Everybody in a church is going to see somebody that has a heart attack, that slips and falls, gets cut in the kitchen, does something. AEDs, I encourage churches to have the AED, because that automatic defibrillator is going to save a life one day. One church just recently, they've now got four of them. They've got them spread throughout the building. I had one church, I went in, they said, oh yeah, we've got one. It's in that closet over there. And I said, well, how do you get to it? That closet's locked. I've already done a walkthrough. Oh, well, the secretary, when she's here, she has the key, but she's not here now. So, you know, had I had my heart attack or you had yours, we would have been in trouble because they probably couldn't gotten to the AED.
So let's shift gears and talk about one of my favorite subjects, free will. Now, I'm not a particularly religious person, although I was raised Catholic, went around a lot of nuns and priests in an Irish Catholic environment. And I know what that environment is, and I understand theology, and I understand different religions. So, and I'm going to say I'm a more of a spiritual person than I am a church-going person, right?
Okay.
And God, don't strike me with some lightning. I haven't been to church for a long time, but if we have this concept of free will, why do some pastors rely on God to take care of them? It seems like a big contradiction to me. He wouldn't have given us free will if he was going to solve all our problems for us. Do you come across some pastors that are just so hardcore, you can't move them off that position that we're not going to worry about security, God's going to take care of us? Because in this day and age especially, that seems kind of dangerous to me.
I agree 100%. Oh, by the way, you're showing 63 violent deaths on churches. I got statistics today from Jimmy Meeks. This is a professional group that travels around the country to churches and does paid training, very affordable. And we've hosted them here once, and Jimmy and I are trying to bring them back now. Jimmy is a 40-year pastor and a 33-year law enforcement officer. He just retired the end of last year to be able to go full-time in his Sheepdog Church Security Ministry. Jimmy told me Carl Chin, carlchin.com, tracks statistics on churches. And as of January 31st this year, 2017, since 1999, 702 people have been killed on or about church property.
That's a significant number.
In the parking lot and not a church member, but it's still on church property. Just this past week, there was a shooting, one person killed in the parking lot. Carl and Jimmy and Lieutenant Colonel David Grossman. Dave Grossman is fantastic. I first heard the colonel at a law enforcement training academy in law enforcement and police work. And followed up, talked with him, met Jimmy. Actually, Jimmy called me and said, Bob, we want to come to Virginia, and we hear that you can help us get there. I hosted them, and we had a great training. We had people come from out of state, as well as all across Virginia and North Carolina and up in the D.C. area. So there is facilities. Another one is the Church Security Ministry. Chris has a program. Glenn Evans has the Church Security Alliance. And these people had, somebody wants to email me, it's churchsecurityinstitute@gmail.com. You may be able to put that up. Three words, churchsecurityinstitute@gmail.com. I will give them some references to training material, risk assessment forms, to things that can help them to get the training if they're outside of this area. At this point in life, I don't really want to train. You notice on our shield, our badge, and that's what I've got on my shirt, we say safety first and then security, and the initials Church Security Institute.
Well, I think it's a good way to go. Now, this seems to me, we did some shows on hospital security a couple of years ago, and my partner and I, Paul, who was on the show, predicted that that's going to be the next, you know, place where shooters show up because of the contradictions in the health insurance, right? Oh, I had insurance and I don't have insurance. And guess what? My kids did because they took away my insurance and I'm going to go act out on that. And we saw a few incidents of that. But from what I'm hearing from you, it seems to me that violence in churches is underreported. Maybe I'm going to say those statistics you've given us are correct, but I'll bet you there's some that are not reported, right? And mm-hmm. I'm even shocked at that number. I mean, that's a big number, and people should be getting that out on the news to understand that this is a real problem.
Yeah.
If you brought in overseas, well, by the way, let me ask you, are those just statistics in America?
In America. Yeah, we're talking about here in the good old USA.
Right.
And you're right. There are a lot of them that aren't reported. And Carl, just as I get reports every day on violence, break-ins, vandalism, arson, burglaries at churches. And, you know, sometimes now I kind of ignore some of the small burglaries, because it's just too much more serious things. Church shootings, they're such soft targets. You mentioned the hospital, and the hospital, in most cases, now has a police officer at the emergency room and has security staff, those usually unarmed, around and about the hospital.
Yeah, but the problem with the hospital is they, like a place like John Hopkins, has about 27 entrances, and they will not put 27 armed guards at 27 entrances. So it's really a waste of time and money to put that guy. Well, it's not a complete waste of time and money because the ER is fraught with a lot of violence. However, I'm not going to go where the police officer is to attack a hospital. I'm going to go where the police officer isn't. Just like at an amusement park or any place else, I'm going to go away from the security or law enforcement person. So a church, not quite as many entrances, but there's still quite a few more than an average building, and almost all of them are unlocked because of the culture. So this is a great challenge.
That's what I said earlier. We're trying to get the pastor and the church leadership to be willing to lock the doors, not before the service, but at least at the time the service starts, lock all but one door. And there you have a control point. You have someone there to kind of document, verify. If it's a visitor, show them where to go. I love it. When I went to one church recently, I didn't know which entrance to go in. I saw some cars on one side of the building. I couldn't see the other side. Come to find out, the main entrance and the people waiting to meet me were over on the other side of the building. I pull in by these cars. I walk up. There's a little walkway between the playground and the building and a little sign pointing toward the back. I walk back there, and there's three or four bricks down beside this nice window. And I figured, well, if I have to, I'll use the brick to go in. Not really. But I thought, well, okay, let's try this door. I pulled on it. The door opened. I walked in, walked around the building for a while. Nobody knew I was there. I could have been a predator. I could have been a pedophile or a burglar. I heard some voices down a hallway, so I walked in that direction and then come across the three gentlemen waiting to meet me. And they said, Bob, how did you get in? We were waiting for you here at the main entrance. Even that is locked. And I said, well, you know, when we take a tour of the building, I'll show you. And it was not locked. And they were shocked by it. So if you don't control it, you're opening yourself up to liability. You're opening yourself up to risk and danger. Same way in a parking lot. People have cars broken into because people are foolish. They leave cameras, phones, valuable items in public viewing area. And then they wonder, why did somebody break in? I always think it's funny, the ones that don't lock the car. And oh my gosh, they stole my laptop. Well, was your car locked? I don't see any broken windows. Oh, you know, I forgot to lock it. Daggone. So pastors are really difficult. Now, mine is a ministry, not a business. So, you know, most of my work, quite honestly, is pro bono at this point, Chuck. I could not run a business with what I can earn from churches right now in this area. I know of a couple of guys that have gone out on a limb and started their own church security consulting business. Two or three of them have talked to me, and I warned them. I said, keep your day job. It's not going to be easy. Oh, no. You know, God's telling me this is what I should do. And I've talked to these preachers, and they want me to come see them. And 6 months later, you know, I'll run into them or I'll hear from them, and they say, you know, Bob, I should have listened to you. I tried some web experience for social media. I did some advertisements on radio and TV, and I just couldn't get anybody to pay me to do it. And I shared one quick example that I had a pastor told me one day. He said, well, you're not charging me anything, so you can't be, even though you say you're a CPP and you've got all of this law enforcement security and church security experience, if it's free, it doesn't have any value. And I said, well, let's look at it another way. When I was in business, I charged $125 to $150. But I'm going to give you a deal. I'm going to give you a church discount. I'm going to give you a tithe, whatever you want to call it. I'm going to charge you $100 an hour, and it's going to take me 5 hours to do what you want me to do initially, $500. Oh, Bob, we can't afford that. You know, we're a small, poor church. I said, but wait a minute. You told me if I didn't charge you something, it didn't have any value. I said, but I haven't finished. Let me tell you what the rest of the story. I'm going to give you my personal check for $500 as my donation, my contribution to your church and to your ministry. So you're going to pay me $500, but I'm going to give you $500. Therefore, it has value. You've agreed on that, but it's not going to cost you anything. Well, I'll have to talk to the leadership and we'll get back to you. That's been 3 years ago, and I haven't heard from him yet, Chuck. So that $500 value that I was going to pay for, it didn't work. So it's sad. I started a couple churches by training their volunteers in the parking lot for the parking lot ministry because they weren't quite ready to do the safety ministry and definitely weren't ready for a security ministry because, oh, my goodness, we can't do that. What will Ms. Jones think if we have these husky guys and gals in here and they want her to do this and do that? I said, well, what is she going to think if somebody knocks her down and steals her purse? What is she going to think if somebody grabs her in the restroom? What is she going to think if somebody carjacks her car as she's leaving at night? It's a sad world that people attack churches and attack the people in churches, but it's a reality today. The Jewish synagogues are going through it, the Catholic Church, the Episcopal Church, the Baptist, Methodist, Presbyterian, and all of the non-denominational churches are being exposed because they're soft targets and people know what's in there. Now, mostly around this area, we don't have the gold that you do out in California I think it's brass or it's copper colored aluminum. But most of the things in the break-ins that I see are the musical instruments, the audiovisual cameras, those sort of things, and the electronics. There have been a couple churches where they put in an alarm system in the hallway, motion detector. They put cameras on one or two doors or in the parking lot. But the old brick comes through the window. They get into the classroom. There they find the laptop. There they find the audiovisual equipment. They go back out the same window because they know they've been in the church probably because it is open and welcoming. They've looked around. They know where the cameras are. They know where the motion detectors are. But they know that in that room there's nothing. You need a full-blown risk assessment, develop the plan, select and train the team that's going to carry out the plan and implement it, and then you've got to stand behind them because one day they're going to save a life.
Bob, you are such a good guest. I actually went out, Jobson and I went out and had a steak and had dinner while you were talking because you filled up all our air. It's brilliant.
You got to let them have a chance to go eat dinner while you talk.
Bob Chauncey, CPP of churchsecurityinstitute.wordpress.com. Bob, thank you very much for all your experience and information about this. I think you may have motivated some people to look at this differently. I like the approach to safety. I think that's an easier sell inside a religious institute than security. And safety covers security. It's included, and it's implied. And I think you've got some good information here for us. So we're out of time.
Thank you for your service, and thank you for what you're doing now to awaken the need. I mean, you know, it's out there. And I've told a couple of pastors. I had one real quick in Texas. I saw where a church had a shooting of a pastor. And same church name here. And I said, hey, you better get something going. It could be you. Never even replied to me.
Bob, thanks again for coming on Security Guy Radio. You're welcome anytime. Give us an update from time to time, would you? And check in with us, see how you're doing. And remember, everybody, we're moving to live stream from our new studio, in our new studio, April 6th, I think we're going for. You'll be able to see us on UBN. You'll also be able to see us at livestream.com/Security Guy Radio. So make sure you tune into that. Until next Monday night, be safe. Thanks for tuning in. Good night.
Thanks, Charlie.